SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, bleary-eyed NFL draft fans. you're better than me if you manage to stay up. Didn't get off to a great start, but it seemed to start to flow. But I had to wake up at 2:30 at some point, I guess. In the middle of the night to see who. The birds had taken, and they went back to bed. And we'll later on this afternoon, we'll see if we can't get a handle on everything that went on. But day two, certainly just because it was a live event and it was involving sports, it had a lot of interest, that it had the feel of a live sporting event. Well, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports on 964. And at our website, if you're listening to stevebick.com, and of course, plenty of coverage here on SiriusXM of the draft. Our coverage is going to be about another good weekend of racing, particularly the Gulfstream kind of wades back into the picture with a card that has the first of its added overnight stakes, the $75,000 Unbridled. And in addition to that group of three-year-olds, we'll talk to Mike Welch later and get Mike's take. There's also maiden specials that are interesting. One's a Florida-bred turf group going a mile and a 16th on the grass. And then there's a 7/8 that has got some nicely bred types and some that have experience and have actually raced pretty well. So that fifth race, I'm very curious if Mike's got some insights. It includes a Shug McGahee firster going 7/8. Mm-hmm. Yep. The Spitestown Colt for the Phipps family. Sabbatical. Medaglia d'Oro. There's actually also an interesting Peter Brandt homebred that seems to be working pretty well for Chad Brown. The American Pharoah colt out of De Valerius, Basquiat, and interesting. And, of course, Arad Ortiz going to be taking mounts. And it feels like a winter Saturday card. There's two other very good allowances. I mean, really good. There's the mile and a 16th, eighth race. Get Mike's opinion. That starts the late pick five at Gulfstream tomorrow. And then there's the 7/8 group that includes the return of Global Campaign. And Stanley Huff, it seems, is swinging into action. Stanley, very prominent on this card. He's got Necker Island and South Bend in the Unbridled. He's got Scars Are Cool in that mile and a 16th, eighth race, and he's got Global Campaign returning. And that race, the 11th, features Spinoff from Pletcher and Soldado as well from Todd Barn. George Weaver's got Majestic Dunhill in here. Hembry, I told you yesterday, on the main track. And you also got Yorkton on the outside for Grand Motion. There's all kinds of things going on in here. Dale Roman's well positioned and got some interesting opportunities tomorrow. Attachment Rate, who, the more you look at the Unbridled, I thought the better Attachment Rate looks. I mean, Dr. Post, very reasonably is the 8-5 favorite, but Attachment Rate, Luis Saez coming out of the Gotham. And Attachment Rate has done little wrong and probably a smart gambit here by Dale. They had been considering the Arkansas Derby, as had Gustavo Delgado with Soros, but Soros runs here as well. And quite a few, actually, of these three-year-olds were considered. So Gulfstream, part of our focus, and, of course, Oaklawn as well. The Oaklawn action, the two sprints for the three-year-old boys, the Bachelor, seasonal debut of eight rings, but plenty of competition. Better come back running. Echo Town for Asmussen, Ginobili for Baltus. Long weekend for Amos. There's all kinds of things going on in here. And then the carousel, four and up, Philly and Mare sprinters, Bella Fina and Mia Mischief bookend this group. And Midnight Fantasy, Joe Sharp, Amy's Challenge, who might be, you know, I'm an Amy's Challenge fan for Mac Robertson. Feels like Amy's Challenge might be circling back toward her good races. We'll see. She's not a bargain. She's 4-1, so it's not exactly the number you would want, because she's still got a couple of ways to go to get back to her really good races. But it's another terrific Saturday card at Oaklawn Park, and it includes a maiden special that closes things out with some experienced horses that, by all rights, should have broken their maiden already. They ran into some hot horses. These are always tough. And then, you know, horses like that that, you know, have run races that normally would be good enough to break a maiden and they get beat, they have a tendency to keep running into good horses. It's kind of a weird phenomenon. I there is a play. When we dive into this, there is a horse I came up with this morning when I dug into the other races beside the stakes. It's a horse that really jumped off the page at me. And I'll be sure to actually, I'll just mention it now, because not all of you will listen, you know, be able to listen live all the way through and keep you from running around and looking for it. Larry Jones sends out, I'm not sure if, let's see if she's a filly or a mare. She is a filly. A Mark Valesky, no less, that Brary Jones owns and bred. Lady of Luxury. And she kind of jumped at me when I looked at this race. Lady of Luxury, 12-1, the two horse in the eighth race. I know I'm betting her. So just let me slip that in while we are still getting going. Let me give you a quick survey before we look at, there's a ton of news, and some of it will weave in as the various reporting types visit. That includes Mike Welch with Florida news. I'll give you quickly, you know, Tampa approved for extension of the meet. They'll run, you know, through May. So another, after Fonner's approval for May, now Tampa set for May. But we'll touch on some other news with Mike from Florida. There's quite a bit of California news to touch on. Kentucky we'll do with Marty McGee. Let me give you the lineup. Paul Matisse is going to join us, as I kind of alluded to midweek. And I reached out to Paul again on that same topic that I've kind of harped on a little bit, which is the bull ring. And Paul and his dad and Duke and you know, the whole family, they, I won't say they specialized in the bull rings and the fair circuit and that type of racetrack, but it's certainly an area that they've made hay while the sun shined. let's put it that way. So Paul's got some thoughts to share about approaching things. And actually, I'll also fold in some Hong Kong with, and thanks to yesterday to Marcus. That was really fun. And I heard a good portion of that again this morning as I was preparing for the show. And the replay was rolling from the studio. And Paul is a big, first of all, he's a big insomniac. That's number one. So he's up all night long and doesn't sleep a lot. So he plays Hong Kong. He's been playing Hong Kong. And so he'll share. And it's been a few years, really, probably 3-4 years since Paul's shared his Hong Kong insights. So we'll talk to Paul Matisse about, you know, some alternative wagering concepts and how he's handling things. And look forward to that as always. Marty McGee. Marty's been kind of incommunicado for a couple of weeks. And so great to get Marty back on. The news yesterday, give you just a you know, quick top line from yesterday. And that was that Churchill, after some idle and irresponsible reporting, claimed that they were going to have horses on the track, you know, in about 12 minutes. The actual specifics were delivered by the actual, not unnamed sources, but actual sources with names on them that actually, you know, say what is specifically happening. And the backstretch at Churchill delayed for opening at least until May 5th. In constant communication with Frankfurt and, you know, just doing the responsible thing until it makes sense for, you know, animals and humans to be moved. And from that point, I mean, they certainly will be ready with, you know, protocols and that, you know, that are in place at Keeneland, for instance, which, you know, was predated restrictions. And they added, you know, for training purposes, they and backstretch admission, et cetera. We'll talk about it with Marty, and we'll also get a little bit, you know, there's really not a lot of active decision making that's possible, but Keeneland looking to get some open dates to probably feather in with Ellis during the summer. And get some things run, the bluegrass, the Makers 46, and, you know, some of the, you know, some of the real principles of the typical Keeneland spring meet. So we'll see what Marty can share there. And Nick Tamerill, we'll get Nick in here, kick off hour two. We'll handicap the Oaklawn pick five and late action. Hammer is doing a lot of what Tina and I have been doing around the house. And Hammer, if you were following him on Twitter yesterday, he was he offered up a number of things he found in boxes and childhood, you know, childhood and adolescent and young adult memories. I think all of us are doing some of that. And I won't claim that we're cleaning house. I will say that we're going through things and maybe reorganizing them. I would say of every 10 items that are handled that we've been hesitant to throw out our entire lives, I would say maybe 3 out of the 10 do get thrown out. It depends on how, you know, depends on how much of a, how much OCD you've got. greeting cards. I mean, do you save greeting cards? And and especially I can tell you, you know, stuff my mother, you know, how do you throw away stuff your mother wrote to you? And my father, I mean, my father's alive. He's 91, but you know, how do you throw that stuff away? The question is, I mean, how often are we going to go back and look at this stuff? We should have a debate about this. What is reasonable to keep and what just, come on, just let it go. Tina says all of it. Tina thinks literally 96 out of 100 pieces should be thrown out. She would say 4 out of 100. So we'll talk to Hammer, DeRosa and Scully together. We'll get their take and see what they're looking forward to this weekend. And, of course, a lot of the chatter yesterday Churchill has got a thing with NBC on Derby Day from 3 to 6. It's a charity. Actually, there's a nice charitable project associated with this virtual derby concept with the 13 Triple Crown winners. And there's already been tremendous debate as people line up behind their favorite Triple Crown winner, or at the very least, look into horses like Assault and Omaha, and you know, some of the lesser lights of the Triple Crown winning collection. It should be fun, and it's going to be for a good cause, and it should be there'll be plenty of discussion and debate. But of course, the real Derby action will be associated with what's going to happen at Hot Springs, and plenty of news. Jay's not going to join us today. Marty and I will do some Derby Watch stuff together, but a lot of details. Jay Pribman and Mary Rampolini reporting yesterday about how the potential fields are shaping up, and Pat Pope making it very clear that the 22, they need 11 for each field to potentially split the Arkansas Derby into two races. And there's already, of course, the two horses coming out of the Oaklawn Stakes that that have spots instantly in the Derby or the Derbies, depending on what happens. Those horses, Mr. Big News not participating in this round. They will wait with Mr. Big News, as we kind of heard from Brett Calhoun. And that leaves Tayshaun and Farmington Road. So they instantly have two slots. Then it becomes a question of earnings. And the horses that have committed and have told the racing office at Oaklawn that they're participating, Storm the Court, Wells Bayou, Nadal, Silver Prospector, and Odor, Basin, King Guillermo, Governor Morris, Fast Enough, American Theorem pops back on the radar screen. That's 12. Crypto Cash and Shooters Shoot. That's 14. And then My Friend's Beer and Charlatan want to participate, but they would not have enough earnings to make it into that body of 14. My Friend's Beer has got 81,000 and Charlatan's got 67,000. So 14 plus the 2 is 16. So where are the other 6 going to come from? Well, Finnick the Fierce, potentially. Tina and I, actually, speaking of Finnick, Tina and I watched last weekend. We watched, we did Hunger Games, you know, one after the other. And Blackberry Wine considered Winning Impression, Mystic Guide. That would get you up to 20. So you're still short. So unless a couple more come out of the woodwork, it does not, right now, it doesn't look like they've got 22, but we'll see. I mean, see how that goes. We'll also, I expect, probably will get a Mary Rampolini visit in, and I also promised Rich Ang, I want to promise Rich Ang getting in. Santa Anita, we should mention, they had an update. They continue to wait for the L.A. County Health Department Supervisor Catherine Barger going through a review of the materials that Santa Anita offered last Thursday. And frankly, you know, the L.A. County office said, the health department said, you know, that they probably have an answer early in the week. Well, it's now late in the week. I don't know. I would maybe think that the fact that they haven't said no out of hand yet is maybe a good sign. Maybe a good sign. And by the way, I didn't mention it the other day since we're talking California, but Los Al got their dates. They're set for their meet, which would be June 26th to July 5th. And I, you know, I wondered aloud when Santa Anita got stymied if they would move things forward. And maybe let's see what happens. But Los Al set with a nice summer schedule. And they've got a number of other pieces of that kind of news from around the country that we can slip in as the discussions unfold. And they're going to unfold right now, starting with Paul Matisse, Marty McGee, Nick Tamaro, Rick Hammerly, DeRozan, Scully, Welch, and more at the Races Weekend Preview. Back after this, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe a word I
the gift at FYC, an old friend I know, Paul Matisse, joins us now. Paul, good morning.
Would I still see suspicion in your eyes?
Did we lose Paul for a second? No. Oh, there he is. Good morning.
We had to have let Elvis finish. He hadn't left the building.
I love it. Well, and it's actually, it's funny. There's a lot of tie-ins to that cover by Fine Young Cannibals. And, you know, we can't go on like this, or can we? I mean, we're going to have to go on a little longer, Paul, with the handful of venues. And, you know, for you, I don't know if you were listening at the start of the show, but, you know, you're an insomniac. You've been playing Hong Kong for years, so you enjoy, you know, the late night and early morning action. You know, then there's people that are looking at, you know, quarter horse racing in Australia, and you know, then there's a 5/8 track like Fonner that takes some getting used to.
Yeah, Duke has got into quarter horse trips. He's been killing Remington.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. That I haven't had time for, but I guess he's been doing good at it. He's doing all the
work. I love it. Well, we'll get Duke next week to talk about that. Because, you know, it is a mystery to me. I mean, Steve Anderson comes on and talks about it. Jeremy Plonk knows a ton about it because of his ties to, you know, the Southwest. And, you know, I went to one champion of champions, and, you know, it's over in 48 seconds or whatever, 53 seconds. it's kind of funny. But, you know, you can bet on it, so we're interested.
Yeah, I didn't know much of the angles on it. But so, like I said, Duke thinks it's all just watching replays and stuff. I'm not sure. That Remington looks a little bit different than the quarter horses that I've watched. You know, I think I watched a few races at Suffolk Meadows. That would be one that, I don't know if you remember that one. That was a short quarter horse track in Long Island.
Wow.
Early 80s. I think Jack Lee called there, and the OTB they tried to get it. But the big angle there was they used to run the quarter horses around a turn. They used to have one distance that was around the turn because it was like a bull ring. And, boy, the inside post did good in that one. That was my whole angle for Suffolk Meadows. And that's a little bit of course.
Well, that's our storyline. And, in fact, Steve Anderson yesterday reporting that they're going to run 1,000-yard races for the first time at Los Al. And you know, the elongation of the track, Doc Allred, you know, making the track more thoroughbred-friendly to help the circuit after Hollywood closed. And it gives them some options, and you know, that's going to be a new wrinkle. There's been quite a few thoroughbreds that have been entering the 800 yard races, and you know, it's you're at that point, you're a 4 furlong essentially, and you know, so some thoroughbreds are being entered that
I always thought of that you get to see actually happen here now is that the 5 furlong turf horses have done really good in those 4.5 furlong races, which is not surprising because it's not really measurable, but you know those are the fastest horses, you know, and those races, if you can get to the front and you can just hang on, you know, the track's so fast and it's, you know, around the turn there. As long as they take the turn. I watched one race where Aaron Greider's horse there that he rode the one day I can't remember who trained it, Lerner maybe. But
yeah,
as long as
yes.
they get around the bend,
yes.
you know.
this leads in. We'll save that one for next week, and I will get Duke on to talk quarter horse. But I want you to give a bit of a treatise. We've heard it from Tony Black a couple of conversations. Tony has explained the bull ring from a jockey's perspective, but Paul, you and Chick and Duke, you guys loved the fair circuit. You know all kinds of success. Nobody has been watching too much bullring racing the last several years, and I think it's contributed to this cacophony of outrage with everything that happens at Fonner. I mean, explain your approach and how much you've been playing Fonner and you know what people should understand about approaching the racing on a bull ring like this?
You know, that the funny part is I've been playing both Will Rogers and Fodder, and I haven't liked the racing at Will Rogers, and I've loved the racing at Fodder, and I checked my records, and I'm winning at Will Rogers, and I think I'm losing a little at Fodder. I haven't hit any of those pick fives. That's, I think, the reason. But, and, you know, it goes to show you that, you know, when I was following these bull rings before, you know, like in an earlier life, there was no such things as pick fives and pick fours. And,
right.
You know, it takes some getting used to that. A lot of crazy things can happen, and you really can't protect yourself for everything on a bull ring. And it's that makes the pick fives really difficult, because, you know, I have no doubt that just going race to race and spot playing horses that you like, that you can do good at Fodder that way. But playing every single race and needing every single race is a, and as we've seen, every one of those pick fives, there's always something that crazy that happens. And I think it was the last one they had on the force out one. The horse that won was 200 and something to one in the pick five. There was 120 less, you know, the less tickets divided by, you know, the whatever it was. It was like it went from like 7,000 to 600 or something like that.
Yes.
The tickets that were left. And you know it's tough to have all backups in every leg. You know, you really, doesn't matter how big your bankroll is, you really can't do something like that. So it's challenging. That's for sure. The horizontals are really challenging. But doesn't make the race less fun, the racing less fun. I think it's been fun for me, because I haven't really had this challenge. I've wanted to do a track like Charlestown or something in the past, but since Fairplex, which is a track that I really loved, because it was kind of, you know, better horses on a bull ring, and I would always go out there for that meet. I'd fly out to California, right up to Saratoga, which was great. It kind of extended the summer, because up there in Fairplex would be about 100 degrees in September, and it was always a great time. The kids were younger, and we, you know, take them to the fair. It was kind of like living the Massachusetts fair. And since they stopped that, you know, really haven't done any bull ring betting. So it's been fun.
Explain the approach. And, you know, I think one of the elements of it that has been maddening for people, and you bring up very much a key point about the multis, and interestingly at Fodder, they don't have rolling doubles. They've got an early double and a late double. There are pick threes, so, you know, if you aren't hitting the pick five and the pick fours, there is the option to back up and you know, try pick threes.
Yeah, and I noticed the pick threes are bigger pools than I expect them to be, too. That's a good point. That might be a more manageable, bet than some of those pick fives.
Less chaotic.
Yeah.
For people, Paul, that are looking at at $2,500 horses for the first time, and looking at the part of it for me that is really I think kind of cool are these 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, 12-year-old the other day, you know, that is still running 55 buyers every single race. It's a real testimony to, you know, what these horses are capable of, and, you know, the longevity, and, you know, don't think for a minute these aren't horses. They've got some arthritis going, and you know, they warm up and they battle, and it's not a style of racing that a lot of us in this era are used to. And, you know, what stuff is extraneous and can be netted out, and what should people focus on in terms of trying to pick winners in what seems like horses that, you know, come in and out of form?
Well, you know, that's what you say about the older horses. That's, you know, they're the favorite part of racing. You know, you like the fandom of, you know, the stake races and stuff. But when I was growing up, watching the older horses that would just run every 3 days, 4 days at the fairs, or even at Suffolk and Rockingham or Finger Lake, you know, I love that part of racing. So, you, like you say, it's good to see, you know, you kind of miss it when you're following the bigger tracks. And speaking of which, my brother Greg's been participating on a Facebook page that's got all the Massachusetts fairs, and he and I have been calculating like old fair horses, how many races they won in the Massachusetts fair. It's been pretty nostalgic. That's about the only nostalgic thing I've done during this whole thing. But which you know, leads into the fodder, because you see a lot of the old, you know, old time horses that, and some of the ones that keep running at fodder, you notice, you know, are bull ringing horses, you know. And the one thing that I will say about maybe those you don't have to really worry about, but when a horse comes in that hasn't run at fodder, you know, you want to see how the horse is acclimated to a bull ring. I think that's the most important thing. Did the horse run in the right spots? Do you think he'll run in the right spots the next time? And those are the things where you can kind of get the best value of, well, this horse didn't handle the bull ring this time, but he's going to handle it next time. You know, and if you can get used to that and watch replays of horses that improved, maybe. I mean, that's the one thing that we got that's great now is you can go back and you can look about, you know, old replays of races, you know, of horses that that actually did run the first time. They might not have run that good, but didn't run good the second time, and you can watch them how they ran both times over the track. And you know, in the old days, you have to wait a year, you know, to figure out what you've learned. This you can kind of do it right on the fly, which is great. And I think that's really important, especially with the horses that. The ones that haven't raced on the bull ring, see, it kind of like separates into two separate categories. You know, the ones that haven't been on the bull ring and how they're going to react. The other horses, you know, how they're going to kind of react. And to what you were saying, you know, they come in and out of form. But those type of horses, it's another thing you don't see quite as much. You know, you see it less on the bigger track, is that they can't work them out and get them right ready to go. To fire their best shot fresh. So it's not really that they're going in and out of form. It's the old-fashioned form cycles, you know.
Racing into shape.
Yeah, racing into shape and also going the other direction. A horse that has peaked, you know, and, you know, maybe not as sharp, you know. And you kind of want to keep track of, you know, the sharp horses versus the ones that may not, you know. In the big time racing, there's a lot of, well, the horse, you know, he bounced and he'll come back, you know, that type of thing. Or the trainer will get him figured out. He'll take the 6 weeks off and figure him out and he'll come back. You know, when they're running every week, that's an impossibility for these trainers. I mean, I'm sure they're great trainers at a founder, but they're not going to turn them around in a week. But they have to run. So you know, you can see it more. You know, of the running part, which is good. That's the kind of thing about racing that I kind of miss. You know, I was talking to my father about this last week. You know, when a horse gets sharp, it's a great feeling to know that horse is going to come back in eight days, and you can count on him. You know, and those are the things you got to kind of look at instead of, you know, have faith in trainers and that the horse will come back and what the lifetime best horses were. It's more from race to race.
A couple of things within, and I'm looking at Tuesday's sequence, and there were some, there's a number of horses where I think there's lessons to be gleaned. And in that first leg on Tuesday, Aerosalt ends up, you know, moving fairly late under Armando Martinez. And what was interesting about this gelding was the turn back. And Andy Serling and I were talking later that night, and Andy said, well, how could you not use a turn back? I said, well, wait a minute. I said, you know, a horse turning back from a three-turn mile to, you know, to a six-furlong sprint, you know, two turns, is that really a cutback? I mean, how many of the, you know, handicapping maxims we rely on, Paul, how many of them are still germane? I mean, is a two-turn six furlongs really much of a turn back from a horse that just ran a three-turn mile?
Well, there's, like you said, there's a lot in this horse that you can talk about. First of all, the thing that I like, the the thing I like the most about Fonner is the 6.5 furlong races. I think they're the most true, where the trip doesn't matter as much. You know, whereas in the mile races particularly, and even the 4 furlongs and 6 furlongs, the being wide in the turns is way more important in those type of races. And that horse was really wide early in that mile race. And I also think that's an example of what I was talking about earlier, is that, you know, he had come in to Fonner off, you know, okay form in Oklahoma, you know, relatively a better horse than this bottom level, you know, type of horses. And, you know, his first time, he didn't really handle the bull ring, being wide in the turns. But, you know, I kind of had a feeling that that was one of the ones I was talking about, he would handle the bull ring in the future, you know. So those are the type of horses I really like on a bull ring, you know, like the second time when you know that they're going to run better than they did the first time. But I think there was also a little bit of the fact that, not necessarily that it was a cutback, but it was running at 6.5 instead of 6, which is a truer distance, where you could handle that if he was wide in the turns, it wouldn't as matter as much, and that he didn't get a good trip in his first race over the bull ring. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty good lesson of a horse that you can pretty much expect that he's going to run better. You know, he was also second time off a layoff. He hadn't run since September, and I know this Marissa Black has done very well at Fonner, but it's what I was talking about before. They're not going to be cranked like you normally think. You got to give more consideration to horses that are going to get more out of a race like that. Where, you know, if you're handicapping Aqueduct in an afternoon, you know, that horse, when it comes back, will have 3 workouts in between, and it'll have 6 workouts ahead of time. You know, that's a totally different animal. Now, also, on the contrary, is that you gotta kind of get a feel of, you know, I kind of have the assumption nowadays that a horse is going to fire his A game when he comes off a layoff, the way that these trainers train nowadays. And this is something that's very hard to get used to, especially at Fonner, and I had a little bit of a hard time with it. You can't make that assumption when they come off a layoff. And even at Will Rogers a little bit, you can't make that assumption that they're gonna run their best race. You almost got to make the assumption the other way and look for the exceptions to the rules that might run better the first time. It's kind of flip-flopped. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, the ones that run good are the exception, not you know, not the rule, as it is kind of on the bigger tracks in modern racing.
We also, I want to juxtapose two horses from, you know, the two key legs here were the first and the fourth, and a lot of people were, you know, agonizing, including me, over the trip that Dazzle Man got. And, you know, I don't want to beat up on Mike Luark, but he came into the race 1 for 55. And, you know, that certainly had to be discussed. And then in the feature, where the, you know, the ridiculously overlaid winner at 36-1, you also were dealing with connections there. A 1 for 30 Gregorio Rivera and a 3 for 72 when it came to Ricardo Martinez. And so, you know, those that look at jockey trainer numbers and you know, consider that portion, and we do, you know, you have to look at it, and we're used to looking at it. How do you have much confidence in, you know, when you're making final decisions and cutting horses out of multi-race wagers, you know, how do you deal with this?
Well, that's one thing I do have a little bit of trouble with at Fonner, because I don't really know the jockeys, but jockeys on a bull ring are more important. You know, I almost don't use them at all anymore on a bigger track. It's either if you're a capable rider or not. That's basically what I look at, and 99% of the jockeys on the bigger circuits are capable. So I almost never even consider anything like that. And on a smaller track, you have to be aware of that, and you have to be aware of which guys send, which guys will go, how they will handle each situation. And that's, I think that's what you were talking about, you know, when you led into the, what's hard about Fauna is that nobody really has followed this track because it's been unavailable. And even if you like it, you can't really bet it because the pools have been so low. So nobody really has a good feel of what, you know, Brian McNeil or Eric McNeil is going to do when they're in post three, you know, or the guys that you mentioned. And it, that's a tough one. You know, you got, again, I guess the replays can be your friend on that, you know, if you want to go back and spend more time. I haven't been able to nail that part of Fauna yet. But I am aware that it is more important. And analyzing pace becomes a little bit more important on a bull ring, because the guys will just naturally want to send more. So, again, here's the assumption. On a big track, I pretty much mentioned the assumption now that a guy, if he has his chance, is going to take a hold.
Hmm.
You know?
Hmm.
And we're at Fauna, I have the opposite assumption. If the guy has a chance to send, he's going to. Doesn't matter who he is, you know? Doesn't matter which jockey he's going to. Which is going to lead to a different, you know, race shape, you know? And they're important on the bull ring, especially on distances where I was talking about before. One of the reasons why I like the 6.5 furlongs and I've done well in those so far there is I don't think the race shapes mean that as much. You know, they have that long run to the first turn, which is a general rule even for big racing that you can take even after you're done with Fauna, is that with the longer the run to the first turn, the truer the race in a two-turn race. You know, so if you're watching and it's a short run to the first turn, more chaos can happen and more chaos will happen, and trips mean more. You know, that's one of the problems with, you know, the Gulfstream, because they run every route race doesn't have a long run to the first turn. And that's one of the problems I think a lot of people have with the, and they think that Gulfstream's route races aren't true. And we don't talk about it much until the Florida Derby or the Pegasus World Cup comes up. Then you hear it, you know, then you hear it a lot. But, you know, throughout the rest of the year, you don't really hear it, you know. And that's extremely important. And I think that's why the 6.5 furlongs is a truer race. But back to the point of the trips matter. If you're wide in that first turn going 6 furlongs, you're in big trouble, you know. So the jockeys don't have a lot of options. They either got to go hard or they got to go back, you know. And doesn't matter what the records are, they're all aware of it. They're riding, you know. I didn't listen to Tony Black, but I'm sure he told you that the when you ride on a bull ring, you tilt your saddle, you jack
sure.
your irons up
AC/DC.
On the right side, you know. So that's just because you're doing that. That's naturally going to lead you to do to be forward and to be left. You know, I mean, the riders are going to generally go in that direction, you know. So, you know, I don't know if I answered it. That was a convoluted
absolutely. Not at all.
But, you know, I think the good part about this is, you know, I don't know how long. The good thing is, I guess, Fauna got extended, right? That's the one thing I was worried about. We're
yes.
going to have all these trips at Fauna and
nothing to do with them. Yeah,
nothing to
go.
With them. Yeah, nothing to do with them. So, you know, it'd be good to watch, you know, in the next, you know, the next 3-4 weeks, you know, how the horses that were wide in the 6 furlong races, you know, was a horse fast enough in those 4 furlong races? They're running less of them, which is a good thing. But if you do have a 4 furlong race, was a horse faster than the inside horses to the turn and got hung out? You know, because when the roles reverse, you know, you want to be on the faster one to the turn. You know, then, and have an idea who is the fastest to the turn if they all send. That's very important.
Nice. Well, and you know, there's also, to be honest, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of these two, specifically of these two tracks, and Tampa is going to continue with their schedule of Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, into May. But it The way this is compartmentalized with Will Rogers and Fonner early in the week, and then start to transition over to Tampa, Oaklawn, and Gulfstream, and it does give you, you know, the opportunity to, you know, to look at the charts and to watch the replays. I mean, one thing, Paul, and I want to transition into a couple of other topics before we run out of time. One of the things that this I hope is doing, I mean, in addition to people looking at racing for the first time because they've got nothing else to look at, I think it also is going to be a valuable exercise for players to do just what you're talking about. You know, go back and look at trips. It's not like we've got this avalanche, our usual, you know, just ridiculous amounts of racing to look at, and we can really... You know, we got more time to kind of go back, watch replays, read some chart notes, find horses that were, you know, that were either outposted and didn't get to the turn like you're suggesting and lost ground. I think that there's some exercises available to players in this scenario that could be valuable learning experiences and enhance their play long term.
Yeah, along the lines of what you were saying too. I really love this. I have mixed emotions about this because I really love how the schedules worked out, like you were saying, that you have the two tracks on Monday, Tuesday, which is it's kind of just perfect on a, you know, on a, you know, on an old school off day. I really enjoyed the Mondays and Tuesdays, you know, that you have just the two tracks running. They have a perfect schedule, you know, and I think...
Yep.
That racing should learn that these schedules that we've been on are really good. I mean, that part of this, you know, this whole period is has been great. Unfortunately, with lesser racing and the way it's scheduled like that, you see the downfall of it as well, is that centralized handle goes up, but overall handle goes down. You know, and that's the reason why we've had so many tracks keep running, and that I think the industry as a whole, you know, has, you know, clung to having as many racetracks as they can run, because, you know, I wasn't really aware of this originally too, but I definitely have learned that once the, you know, if your overall handle goes down, you don't get it back. You know, that's like when New York City OTB closes. I know it's the availability, but When racetracks close, the overall money that's bet on racing goes down in the short term, you know. And I think you and I have talked about this before. Racing's never really allowed a mix to happen where what's the best for racing, you know. Maybe a short-term loss is probably the best thing for racing, but you can't have all these tracks and ADWs go broke either, so.
Yeah.
So... You know, it's kind of like a mixed thought there. You know, like I really like this part of it, but I don't want racing to, you know, to be less because the overall handle's down.
Well, and there's going to be, I hope, and I've actually reached out to a couple of people that are consultant types and you know, behind the scenes that work with racetrack organizations to see what, you know, what the key learning is coming out of this, because there absolutely is, you know, the less is more concept. I don't think that's a new, you know, a new epiphany to people, but there is, you know, there absolutely is some niche conceptual execution that needs to be appreciated. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you go back to Tampa Tuesday when Tampa, you know, that those winters when Tampa was, you know, the focus on a Tuesday, and they killed it. And then they decided, oh, we're going to go up against the big tracks now, and we're going to run, you know, a Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, whatever kind of a schedule. I used to play Tampa when I was an afternoon show. We loved Tampa Tuesday. It was one of the highlights of the week was to, you know, play the the late afternoon action at Tampa. And now, you know, Ed DeRosa will be on later. I mean, Ed loves, you know, the Mahoning Valley on Monday, Tuesday. You know, you're a big Finger Lakes play guy. So, you know, there's something to be said about following circuits that, are operating, going way back.
Gulfstream was a Tuesday. Gulfstream
How
ran
about
on
that?
Tuesday. Because you know, New York didn't. So they wanted to be part of the OTB money, you know, going way back. And I remember how that's kind of like how Gulfstream kind of grew with, the Northern crowd, you know, the fact that they were the main show back then. I mean, racing's changed 50 times since then, but it's the same kind of concept.
Paul, let me got about 5-6 minutes to fill out, and I don't know if you heard yesterday where Dick Powell and Marcus Hirsch, and if you've had a chance to see what DRF did with this very nice, you know, 14-page Hong Kong guide, but you were invaluable when I first started getting involved with Hong Kong and, you know, trying to draw attention to the action. Let's also just give a quick treatise there and, you know, let people know that, you know, what the overall approach should be there and how quickly they can, you know, they can acclimate. They still have got about 3 months, 3.5 months of racing at Sha Tin and Happy Valley.
I'll lead off with this great story about Hong Kong. They ran 5 dirt races on Saturday, which is, I absolutely love that they're dirt racing. Unfortunately, we don't get enough of it. So I had a long day on Saturday, and believe it or not, with everything going on, my Hong Kong database went out. So I've had to do a lot of Hong Kong by hand, and so Saturday was a long day to try to do it. And I took, in the first 3 or 4 dirt races, I think I bet the right horse in every race, and I didn't hit anything. And I was waiting for the last one. And I don't remember it. I fell asleep. And I couldn't remember. I woke up, and I watched the race, and my horse won. And I was, like, rooting for the horse because I thought I had played it. And then I checked in my ADW, and I had fallen asleep before I played it. So that's the dangers of playing racing at 4 o'clock in the morning. And he was 31-1, if you want to.
Oof.
So I didn't get right back to sleep. But that was a tough one to. The old. I don't think I've ever had that one before. Get shut out because you fall asleep. Well, I usually make a joke about it. I fell asleep if I miss a race. You know, I slept through it or something. That's my joke. But this time I actually did sleep through it. I slept through a winner.
You had alerted us. You were the one who alerted us when we first were starting those conversations about Hong Kong. You were the I had you, I think, second. I mean, Pat Cummings came on for a couple of years, and you explained that those races, when they do the dirt card, and they do it about 4 times a year, that's a huge opportunity because the Hong Kong public, they still gravitate to Marrero and I suppose these days Zach Purton, and they aren't necessarily as strong in the dirt races as they are on the grass.
Yeah, Zach Purton is a really good jockey, and he's learned how to ride in the dirt as well. But just it doesn't mean as much, you know. That's the good part, you know, of the dirt racing is that. You know, trip doesn't matter as much, and they still fall into the same of some of the traps. You know, like they don't understand that a horse can run without cover, and they don't understand that the horses can be set more. You know, and that type of thing, and it's kind of backwards there because they zero in on horses in the turf races and just bet them like they can't lose, and yet the boards on the dirt races are usually more spread across the board and. I find that the dirt races are easier to get, you know, just in general, just like here. You can get to the 3 or 4 contenders easier, whereas when you're playing, especially when you're playing tries and on the turf races, almost anybody can run third if they get the right trip, you know, so it becomes,
sure.
You know, how many can you use, you know, type of thing. I know a lot of these turf races, where in the dirt races, you don't have that issue. In fact, like the race I was talking about, where where I fell asleep on, I had a 31 one shot that was going to key with three horses, you know, and it ran right in, you know. And I think in the 20 years I've played Hong Kong, you know, on the turf end, I'm almost, you can never do that. You use three horses and, you know, you got to get lucky to hit a try by doing that, because just the nature of that, almost anybody can run third. So keeping that in mind, you know, they have what they call bankers, but it's just keys, you know. And what you want to do in Hong Kong if you're playing triples is try to narrow down your contenders and then open it up as you go, kind of like what we would do with a superfecta here, you know, 1 by 3 by 5, you know, type things. You know, those are the type of bets sure. You want to play when you're playing in Hong Kong, because it just, as further down the placing order, it really expands how many horses can get there, you know. So those are the type of betting strategies that you need to have to play Hong Kong, which is different than, say, you know, if you're playing a lot of dirt racing in America, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have that kind of approach. As far as the handicapping, you know, they have the two different tracks, which, you know, Happy Valley is more of, like we were talking about, it's more like a bowl ring because it's kind of got three turns. So inside posts mean way more, and widen the turns mean more. The Shot Tin is a classic Australia wrong way turf sprint track where they just kind of go easy, even though they look like they're sending, they're not really going that hard early in the races, and then they line up across the track, 9 or 10 of them, and they ramble home, you know. And I would imagine my friend Sean Borman is doing a lot of work in Hong Kong, and he's more of a last quarter type of guy when it comes to pace stuff, and I think he's loving that type of thing because it becomes more important at Sha Tin versus Hong Kong. And I think that happens with the shorter the race, the more important that is too, which is kind of like contradictory to what we're used to. So it's kind of like the opposite, you know, like if you're going to bet a 6-furlong race here, you want to know the horses that are fast from the gate. The 6-furlong race, you want to know who's fast at the end over there. It's just totally upside down. And, you know, that type of approach is what you need. They run a lot of 7-furlong turf races, which we don't see a lot here. And they're kind of a hybrid, just like you would think, but it's hybrid the other way, you know. The horses that run 7 furlongs don't ramble as hard, but they can do it for 3 furlongs, you know. So it's that's kind of unique, and I think people are intrigued by it when they first started doing it. But it's pretty difficult, you know, especially somebody that played American racing all your life. You know, you don't really kind of have that approach. One of the biggest problems I think with Hong Kong right now is what you alluded to. The two jockeys win every race. And they're really liberal about how the jockeys can jump around. So pretty much every race is Marrera Purton going to win? Because they're on the two favorites. You know, eight out of the 9 races every day. And that grows old on me. I'm sure it might grow old on some of the viewers too, you know. That just every single race, it's like, it's kind of like what, you know, it used to be playing Bay Meadows with Russell Bays, you know. It's like every race. Is this the race he's going to lose? You know, type of, I don't love that part of the Hong Kong. And that's, you know, that's something that is kind of a turnoff. But, and it's a big issue over there now, because not only are they the better jockeys, they're riding the better horses every single
right.
race.
Right.
You know, and also, if you're going to bet on them, you're not getting much value. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, they're always on the favorites. They're always over bet. And they're going to win. They're always over bet, but they're going to win on a Shot Tin evening. Each of them are going to win 3 races, probably. You know, at least 2 each. And that, you know, that gets a little old. You know, and I think that, and, you know, I heard one of our American riders now, Rispoli, you know, that was one of the reasons why he said he came to America, because it got old to him. I can imagine it gets real old for the jockeys that are riding against them, you know, that I thought that was funny that he mentioned that, because it really is a big issue there. And if you're going to start playing, you have to really take it into account.
Paul, obviously we could go the whole morning, but this was invaluable as always, and just appreciate, you know, the perspective, because, you know, players need to hear some insights from, you know, proven winners about how to approach this. And, you know, I sense, and I suppose part of it's because, you know, the social media landscape is dominated by negativity for the most part, but I can sense some of the frustrations, and I just wanted players to,
you know, and I think that's natural. You know, I mean, if you're at the racetrack, what do you hear after a race? You know, the negativity, I don't like that word actually necessarily at it, because that's part of racing. That's part of sometimes that's part of the fun.
Sure.
You know, when you're at the track, you go, my grandfather, after every single race that ever ran, he says, I should have hit that one. sometimes he actually did hit it. He'd look at his ticket and say, I hit it. But he was so inclined to say it after every race, you know. And that's part of the fun of it. So what comes off as negativity sometimes on Twitter a lot of times it's just natural, you know. I know it's hard to decipher when it's in written form, but, you know, and it doesn't translate as much fun when it's on Twitter, probably. And if you want to look back and you want to be critical of the people playing horses, I guess it's easy to do if they're complaining on Twitter. But, I try to see through that, you know, and talking about races at Fonner to me is great. You know, to have all the discussions of racing, that's what I live for, you know. And
I'm
thankful that we've had it in this last month and a half, because I don't know what I would have done with myself through this whole time. I consider myself really lucky. I'm sure a lot of us do, that we've had racing, and we had something that we're passionate about to be able to do. Not
exactly.
Everybody does.
No, my father I talk to daily, and he's going crazy without
baseball.
Yeah,
my mother is that way too. I worry about her because she hasn't done anything. She can't do anything, you know.
Exactly. Well, and of course, dealing with Chick can't be easy.
Well, you don't worry about him. He's always there.
I mean, for your mother. And the kids, everybody's okay?
Yeah, but we're doing like everybody else. We've all become teachers, right?
We've all turned
into Derby Barbies.
Exactly. She's got a thing going right now. She sent me a text, 9:45. You know, don't be loud. I've got we've got a session at 9:45. So she absolutely, she's down there. Paul, this was wonderful. Great to catch up. Stay
too,
safe,
Steve.
And stay sane.
Yeah, we'll talk
and
to you later.
You bet. We'll see you and talk soon. Paul Matisse, everybody, follow Paul on Twitter. And I tell you, now that we know, next week we'll get Duke next week and hear secrets of becoming a quarter horse player. And I do want to mention, I'm going to put up a couple of things. One of our Derby Trail friends, Scott Jay. He got a big kick out of Suffolk Meadows being mentioned, and the original name, apparently, there's a lot of response. Tom Bellhouse, must be a South Shore guy. He came up and said Par Meadows was the original name because of a company called the Par Organization built that racetrack in the late 70s on Long Island and in Yaphank. And unbelievable. Very, I'd never heard of it. Never heard of it before. And then in 1986, it was known as Suffolk Meadows. So Paul referencing it as Suffolk Meadows, and a lot of people that grew up in the area obviously knew it as Par Meadows. And one thing that I see, because I did a search, a ton of concerts of really notable artists played at the racetrack as a concert venue. Pretty cool. It's just a wealth of knowledge. We'll take a break. We got to move some things around because I wasn't going to break up that visit with Paul too too good, too much insight. And so Marty McGee next will push Nick Tamaro into hour three. And it's a good thing I left open a spot in the schedule. Let's take this time out, a little past the top of the hour. Marty McGee next. Got visits coming as well with Hammer and Scully DeRosa, Nick Tamaro, Mike Welch. I don't know if there's going to be more. That may actually fill out the dance card. Back after this on SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payments.